What I've dedicated my life to is revenge.
A brand new drama based on the best-selling novel.
They think they're better than us.
Who do you think you are?
I'm going to prove to them that they're wrong.
She's punishing me.
You destroyed my family. I will not rest until I've destroyed yours.
A Woman of Substance on Channel 4 starts tonight at 9.
So you go to the doctor, your labs come back normal, but you're still exhausted, foggy, anxious, inflamed, or you just don't quite feel like yourself. And today we're talking about why that happens and the deeper testing that could reveal what traditional medicine often misses. Today we're joined by Dr. Victoria Andresia. I'm probably botching that, and I'm so sorry. She is a board-certified internal medicine physician with training in integrative and functional medicine. And so she works with women's health, hormones, environmental toxins, gut health, peptides, and all the things that are being talked about so much out there. And you guys are probably like, her last name doesn't matter because she has all the answers. And so we'll have her name linked in the show notes for you to have easy access to her. But it's so good to have you here, Victoria. I was just telling you a little bit about my story, about, you know, being 3 months overdue of my period, waking up with body anxiety, going to the hormone clinic and seeing other women that I know there, and their lives are just completely turned upside down. A lot of people go to the doctor and they get labs done and they're told that everything looks normal, but they feel awful. Can you explain what's happening? What is going on?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And I do, the majority of my work is with women, I would say 90%. And it's exactly what you're describing. I have women that come to me from other clinics or they've already tried hormones and they're like, what's going on? I can't find the solution to this problem. And I would say the first thing is that when you go to your regular doctor, they're just checking a basic panel, right? Which is like a CBC and a CMP, which is like some blood count, some kidney function, liver function, and maybe like a vitamin here or there. But that doesn't really tell me anything, right? Like that's not information, like unless you're like really sick and in the hospital, that's not going to help me. Right? Like I want to look at your vitamin D, your B12. I want to look at the hormone levels, your FSH and your LH, which are, you know, other hormone markers that tell us like, is this like a menopause thing or is it, you know, just irregular periods for another reason? Because there's other things that can cause irregular periods. And then the other thing too, that I think we miss a lot is checking cortisol, but not just like on a blood test. Cortisol, you need to check it throughout the day, right? Like it gets us out of bed in the morning, it goes up mid-morning, and then it kind of trends down. And with my work with women, I mean, we're all high stress, right? Everyone's working, or you're taking care of kids, or you're taking care of grandkids, or like there's something always going on. Like we're the caregivers in our family, and we carry that stress. And what happens is that our cortisol gets affected. And you'd be surprised how many perimenopausal women have had that just by becoming aware of how stress is impacting their body, when they learn to like take time or like, you know, there's supplements that can help your adrenal glands and like that stress, their periods will become regular again because it's not only perimenopause. Sometimes it's just like, you know, you might be in your late 40s or your early 50s and like stress has taken its toll. So you have to look at some of these environmental factors and lifestyle things as well. And you can't see that when you just go to your primary care doctor on the basic labs that they do.
Right. So what are the most common symptoms that people often come to you with?
So the most common symptoms that women come to me with, one, this is what I hear. I'm gaining weight and I'm doing all the same things. The things I used to do don't help me lose weight anymore. They'll say I'm tired all the time. I have brain fog. Low libido is another one. And then sometimes like they really worry about their memory. Like I'm having difficulty with word finding. Like, you know, that's another one that they're like, is this dementia? I mean, no, most of the time it's just like your hormones are off and hormones can help with that. And then you'd be surprised as well that like even frozen shoulder, like something that's like frozen shoulder, that is menopause symptoms. That's low estrogen, right? Because estrogen is a lubricant for your joints. So even things with your joints, palpitations, I have women that go to cardiologists and cardiologists, like everything is fine and everything is fine, but women are still having palpitations. That also happens, like your heart racing, that's what that means, is because of the lower estrogen. When your hormones start fluctuating, people will feel that. So it really affects like every system.
Yeah. So what are doctors typically testing and what are they not testing? I mean, I just went and got a whole panel of stuff done because I started feeling like I've been getting those palpitations, but it feels like it's in my entire body, like waking up with body anxiety, not being able to sit still, having to get up and start my day at a ridiculous hour because my body just doesn't want to settle. So I asked my doctor, I'm like, check me for everything. So everything was checked off. But if you don't advocate for yourself, like what are doctors typically missing?
Well, I just like thinking about things that have been said to my patients. I think that people, some doctors will just look at labs and be like, you're not in perimenopause. Or, well, perimenopause, you can't see that on blood work. That's actually a constellation of symptoms, kind of like what you're describing, right? Like having trouble sleeping, increasing anxiety, irregular cycles. Like that can just be like a sign that the progesterone is, on its way out. But I can't look at your labs and say, like, no, what you're telling me is not true. Like that's not, you can't. Perimenopause is just a constellation of symptoms. So I think that that's one thing that we get wrong. And then the other thing is, I mean, obviously, when you go to the doctor, you have like a 10, 15-minute appointment. So you don't really have time to like delve into, like, I have a lot of women who are like overtraining at the gym, right? Maybe you need to talk to them about that, or maybe they're not eating enough. Like, you have to really get into the lifestyle. I think we're missing that piece, that conversation. And then as far as the blood work, like I said, I think it's great that you're getting all that whole panel done. But what we're looking at as well is like inflammatory markers, right? Like, do you just have an excess amount of inflammation? Like, our panels are really extensive. We're looking at that. We're looking at some genetic markers to see if that's contributing to the high cholesterol, or is it just lifestyle? Is it, hormones impact that as well? We're checking vitamin D or omegas. A lot of people, most people are low in their omegas, omega-3 being the one that we want to be elevated. So we are looking at that. And then on the hormone side of thing, like on our hormone panel, not only are we testing all the hormones, but we're looking at B12. Brain fog can happen if you have a low B12, right? So then it's just
Right.
like, got to look at that as well. You want to look at their vitamin D. So yeah, you need to look at everything, because recently I had a woman who was going and getting pellets, and the dose on her pellets was insane. That I was like, I'm not even comfortable doing this high dose of hormone pellets. So I was like, let's just do a whole panel. I'll pellet you, but let's see what's going on. Her B12 was really low, her vitamin D was really low, and then her thyroid wasn't, which we also have to look at the thyroid, it wasn't optimized, right? So some of her symptoms could have been because her thyroid wasn't being addressed. And so what the clinic was doing was just every time she said, I don't feel good, like upping and upping up, upping the dose of testosterone. But what did we do? I started addressing her B12. Like, we started addressing the thyroid, and then she comes in today and she's like, wow, like normally by this time I feel terrible when I need to get repelleted. I'm like, yeah, because that wasn't the only problem. There was a lot of other stuff going on.
Right. Yeah. And I told you before we hit record that I ran into someone 20 years older than me. So I'm 41. This woman is probably 20 years older than me. And she said that she's at the max amount of hormones that she can take. Like they just keep increasing her and increasing her. And she's literally had to take 3 weeks off of work recently because she just can't handle it. And she was telling me she was crying over everything. And, it's interesting that you say that because I'd be interested to revisit the conversation or be a fly on the wall for the conversation she had. Because, as you mentioned, this other person that you were working with is at the max level, the high level of hormones. That's absolutely insane. And there's so much deeper things at root. It's really confusing out there right now because of all of the like experts and influencers pushing all of these quick fix products as well. And so what is the danger of, starting these quick fix products that we don't really know if they're working or not? Like, is it dangerous to take too much B12, for example?
So B12 is generally safe, right? But you can overdo it. But there's not really a lot of side effects of like B12 toxicity. I haven't really seen that. But I would say I'm always suspicious of quick fixes, always, because that is just not, that is not it, right? Like nothing ever comes by taking a shortcut. I don't think anything good comes from taking shortcuts. And we already know there's so much evidence, and I mean studies and studies and studies, which probably weren't necessary, showing us that lifestyle factors contribute to someone being healthy. So if I just am taking all these quick fixes, but I can't sleep well, or I'm not exercising and I'm just eating whatever I want, not like really taking care of like where's the food coming from? Is it clean and is it high in fiber? Then like what are you really achieving? I just don't know how
Right.
to health without like looking at the foundation of what you're doing on a daily basis.
Yeah, 1000%. What about gut health? How does gut health impact things like anxiety, fatigue, or hormones?
Yeah, so gut health is a big one. And I mean, it took me a while to kind of merge them, but now I don't do hormones without addressing gut health because I noticed the women that were having side effects from hormones were the ones who had impaired gut health. So first, our immune system sits in our gut, right? And anytime that we have high inflammation in our gut, like what they call leaky gut, what we're doing is one, we're increasing our risk of autoimmune disease. And then you're also not able to detox properly. And not a lot of people know this, but in our large intestine, you have a group of bacteria called the estrobilome. And that helps us detox estrogen, right? So if you're taking estrogen, we detox in the liver, you detox in the large intestine, and you want to be able to excrete out the byproducts of the estrogen that you're taking. And so what happens if you don't have a healthy gut, you're going to start reabsorbing that estrogen in the large intestine. And then you're going to have symptoms like, PMS or bloating, or, your skin starts looking weird. That is not something that we want to do. So not only are we addressing gut health because one, it's a detox pathway and we all need to detox better anyways, but it's going to help us be able to tolerate being on hormones. And then also, if you don't have a healthy gut, it increases your risk of autoimmune disease, and nobody wants that. So you have to just really address that. So I always merge those two together. If someone wants to come and do hormones with me, I'm looking at the gut.
Okay, and what about environmental toxins? What do those play in chronic illnesses?
Oh, that's another really like big one. And I wish I could order all these panels on everybody, but it's really interesting how many toxins we are exposed to on a daily basis. And even if you feel generally fine, like I would say I generally feel fine, but I just got my environmental toxin report back, and it's really high in mold, and then it's high in pesticides, which then looking into it is just like the vegetables that you're bringing home, like are you really cleaning them like properly, because there's pesticides on them, right? And I would just grab an apple and just like rinse it under the sink really quick, but that's actually
Oh
not
my
enough.
God, I just did
Yeah,
that.
that's not enough, because but the reason it's important is because a lot of these toxins can be endocrine disruptors, right? So they do affect our hormones. I do also think, I know we're talking about women, but also why we're seeing men with lower sperm counts, right? And lower testosterone. It has to do with the environmental factors that mess with our hormones. So that is just like, if you have someone who's like on hormones, you're doing all the basic things, right, that I normally do, and they're still not feeling better, then yes, that's the next thing. You got to check. And especially, I mean, I'm in Florida, but I think mold is more prevalent than we realize. And mold can cause brain fog. It can cause weight gain. And if you're not really addressing that, then you can't really achieve, overall health. So I do check that. But I normally like start with what I know. And then if someone's like, yeah, I still don't feel better, then I'll go to the environmental toxins. But everybody has environmental toxins, even in our skincare products, right? And I've tried to like clean up my skincare as much as I can, but like there's certain things that I'm just like, yeah, this is clean and like it's not doing anything, like foundation, right? So then you resort to like a not so clean one, but everything we put on our skin gets absorbed. So women are definitely need to be more cautious of that.
So that's concerning because I know a lot of people listening are like, okay, well, what if it is my environment, but I'm stuck here, or I can't leave here, or I don't know how to change this? What are some things that people can do?
Yeah, so water filters, right? Like if you can install some water filters to make sure that you're getting cleaner water. And then the other thing is like air purifiers. That can be really helpful. The other thing is a lot of people like their home like nice smelling nice, but those plug-ins are really toxic. So trying to use like more natural things. Then there's a website, it's like the E EWG.org, the Environmental Working Group, where you can find cleaner products. Like we just switched. We had a cleaning service, and they were using, like, you can tell, like, it was, like, really chemically. It smelled really intense when they were cleaning. So, we bought all, like, cleaning products, and so we've switched to that. So you can find cleaner things to use in your home. Like I said, those plug-ins are terrible. Anything that's overly scented is not good for you. So you can make smaller changes, right? And it's not going to happen overnight. That's the other thing, because I think that could be really overwhelming. It took me about a year or a year and a half to slowly be like, okay, like, first it's going to be like the shampoo and the soap that we're using. Now it's going to be like my makeup or whatever. And now it's like the cleaning products. I think you have to do it stepwise, because if you try to do it all at once, not only is it going to be expensive, but then you're going to be really overwhelmed.
Yeah, absolutely. So your clinic focuses on longevity and prevention. And so I know for myself, I mostly only go to the doctor when something is wrong. Why is that approach outdated? So what does preventative medicine actually look like?
So even though someone feel good, we can still, like, with our testing, see, okay, there's inflammation here, or there's something going on with your gut, as well. So what we're doing is that we're just wanting to see, okay, this person feels good, but how can we make them feel better? How can we optimize them? And especially as, like, this is how I see it, like a perimenopausal female, right? There are consequences of your hormones starting to decline, right? As hormones go down, your cardiovascular disease risk goes up. Right. So you might be feeling good, but, like, let's look at your markers. Do you have cardiovascular inflammation already? Right. Because then we got to combat that. We also want to look at, where's your bone health right now? Because I've seen a couple of women in their late 30s who have osteopenia on a DEXA scan, which is a bone scan. But if you go to your traditional doctor, they're not ordering that for you until you turn 65. Well, if you have osteopenia at 39, you're going to have a couple hip fractures by 65, right? So that's too late. Like, we're looking at that too late. So that's really what it is. It's just like, okay, I feel good, but how could I feel better? But I think, like, in perimenopause, like you're experiencing right now, I think this is a perfect age where you're like, okay, things are starting to feel off, and it's the perfect point to say, how do I want to live the rest of my life? Right? You don't necessarily feel bad, but, like, now that I'm here, how do I want to feel the rest of my life? What do I want the rest of my life to look like? And that's what the preventative part is. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like, I had a patient tell me once, she's like, I don't know how to use you because I feel okay. And I'm like, yeah, but, like, we saw all this stuff on your blood work. This is what we're trying to fix, right? So you don't necessarily have to feel bad. We just don't want you to feel bad. We don't want you to become diabetic and then, have, like, an amputation of your toe or have cardiovascular disease because of the insulin. Like, there's so much stuff that we can do. And you'd be surprised. The other thing is that people will tell me, oh, I didn't realize how bad I felt until I started feeling better. Right?
I
That's
mean,
another.
this morning I can't help but to admit that I was thinking, why didn't I go get this checked out sooner? Like I know my age and I know that these kind of things start happening. And for me, I felt like I went when it was too late already because my body is feeling anxiety in the morning and all of these things. So I definitely can get on board with that. But it's just the mentality that our society has been driven into is like, only go when something is wrong. But I definitely wish I would have went like months and months ago, as soon as there was a little hiccup with my period, right? But waiting till it's too late. So are there super early warning signs that people should pay attention to? So, I mean, I've been told it's okay to miss a period. It happens once in a while, but was that an early warning sign that I ignored?
If you've had a history of regular periods, then yes, like, missing a period would be like, thing, right? Like, what is going on? Then the other one is not sleeping well, right? Like, we start to, when the progesterone is low, like, that's a really hard time to sleep. Or if you're just, like, generally maybe not an anxious person, but you're like, wow, like, I'm getting really irritable, and, like, the people at work are, like, giving me anxiety, like, so little things like that where you're like, oh, maybe I'm just, like, feeling off. Well, that feeling off is a sign that your hormones are also off. And even, like, night sweats at night, that could be, like, sometimes people are like, oh, like, I thought it was just, like, hot in my room or whatever. But if you're having to make adjustments in the bedroom where you never had to before because of the temperature, that's, like, another sign. I think we let a lot of things go, right? Like we're just gonna let's suck it up and like it'll be fine. But then, and then you end up and you're like, oh man, actually things are not okay right now.
Right, exactly. So you work with treatments that many people are curious about, like peptides and regenerative medicine. Can you explain what those are in simple terms? What exactly are peptides?
Okay, so peptides are amino acids that they go into our body and they tell work on a specific thing, like telling our body, for example, to increase growth hormone or telling our body to repair the gut lining. That one was BPC 157, which is really popular. So they all have like a specific task, but they're amino acids. Some of them happen naturally, like in our body, like BPC and KPD naturally occur in our body. We're just making it in our, you know, to increase or improve something. But GLPs are also considered peptides, like the
Okay.
tirzepatide. Those are also because your body makes GLP-1. But what the GLPs are doing is just increasing that GLP-1. So those are also considered peptides. And so when I'm seeing someone and we're working on the hormone part, you can use some of these to kind of boost, right? So if you have someone who's like, oh, I have brain fog, or I'm like memory issues. There's a couple peptides that help with that. There's peptides that help with anxiety for really severe insomnia. There's one called DSIP. That one helps with the insomnia. And then I really love the BPC because it helps with joint pain because we start getting a little bit achy as we get older. That one is really good, and it also helps with your gut. Like, so that one's good for that. There's so many different ones. Like the list is endless of what you can do with peptides. So we really, when people come and we're doing hormone therapy, if there's anything where I'm like, okay, there's a peptide that can support you, then we add that in. But the good thing and what I like about peptides is that they don't have to be long term and you don't get any symptoms when you come off of it, right? Like if you were to stop hormones, you're going to feel awful when you stop the hormones. But if you do peptides, let's say like you just were running, training for a marathon and you hurt your ankle, you can take BPC for 2 to 3 months. That kind of feels better, and then you can just go on your way and not have to take it anymore. So that's what I really like about pep.
Right. Okay. And what about stem cells? Where do those fit into the future of healthcare?
Well, so the stem cells are like very exciting in that you can use it for different things. I think most people are familiar with stem cells for joints, right? For the joint injections, that's where most people are familiar with the stem cells. But then you can also do them IV, like get them intravenously. And I mean, the stem cells go where they are needed. So there's two different things. So I want to talk about exosomes really quick because you can do both. So exosomes decrease inflammation, but it's not like a live cell. It's just decreasing inflammation. But the stem cells are alive, so they're going to go to where they need to go to heal something. So when we do the stem cells in our clinic right now, we're doing them IV, but soon we'll be doing joints as well. And we've had patients who have severe allergies who get the stem cells and their allergies go away. It can help with heart health. So you'll see the changes like on an echo and an ultrasound of the heart. You can see that. And then it can help even like in people who have like liver disease, you know, like that where it, you know, it's not looking good. It can help some of that regenerate. Even when you do it IV, you can see some improvement in joint pain as well, even if you're not injecting straight into the joint. And these stem cells are alive in your body for about 90 days. So for 3 months, you know, it's doing something. And some people do need like more sustained. But let's say, like, even COVID, some people were using it for post-COVID lung, people who were still having like asthma type symptoms after COVID, and it can really help with that. So, I mean, the applications are kind of endless. I think we're just starting to get into like what stem cells can be, especially in Florida, because it wasn't until July that we were allowed to use those in our clinic.
Right.
But that's really, really exciting to see like what it's been able to do so far.
That is super exciting. So for someone out there listening who feels like something is off with their health, but they don't even know where to start. So what are some of the first steps that someone should take?
Well, I would say the first thing is to find a provider, right, that you feel like you can communicate with. That can be a hard thing, but I mean, you have websites like the Menopause Society, Institute of Functional Medicine, where you can find providers that are more like, I would say, open-minded, right, to what we're going through at this phase of life. And that could be a start because people want to feel heard, right? And you want to feel like you're not crazy, which is something that I see. People are like, am I crazy? And I'm like, no, this is normal. And then that way you can get the testing and just kind of validate what you need to do. But I do think that it's going back to what you said before, there's not going to be a quick fix. So if you already know thing that you kind of need to address, like maybe you're going to bed at midnight because you're watching Netflix or on your laptop until then, maybe we got to adjust the sleep, right? If you're skipping meals, maybe we need to, focus on what we're eating and increasing our protein intake. And if you're not exercising, 100%, let's add that in. And you don't have to do it 6 days a week to start, but maybe you're just doing something twice a week, right? And like building that up. But I do think that we get used to living a certain way, and then when you hit a certain age, that doesn't work for us anymore, right? Like I have like 6 year olds who are like, "Well, I never needed that much sleep." Like, okay, but now you're 60, so maybe let's not sleep 5 hours. Maybe we need to sleep 7. So it's just kind of adjusting.
Being open to that, like that things can change overnight in a sense, and starting to look for alternative ways to do things. So what lifestyle habits can make the biggest difference in long-term health? For people who are like, I feel okay, but I want to start making some changes. What would you recommend they start doing?
Okay, so definitely making sure that you're sleeping, because if you're not sleeping well, then I don't think anything really gets better. So making sure that you're sleeping. But then the other thing that I see is, and I fall into this as well, we get really repetitive with our diets and we get kind of like bland because it's just easy. Whatever's easy to make, right? And then there's already studies, and again, I don't think we needed the studies, but the studies are there that if you increase your diet in fruits, vegetables, fiber, that's healthy, but also spices. Spices have polyphenols, and that can actually help reverse aging if you're adding more spices to your food, or even herbs as well. Rosemary and oregano are like two really good ones to add to your food, but that also helps with your gut lining, right? Like anything that you're adding that is rich in these nutrients can help your gut lining. And I think that's something that's easy to do. Like I tell people, like if you just make ground meat, you can add like turmeric or you can add cumin or whatever to the ground meat or fennel, but we're just like, no, salt and pepper, right? But like adding these things can help your gut. It can help reduce inflammation in your body, and it's something relatively easy to do. So I would say getting creative with what you're eating. And then, I mean, if you have the time and a place to do it, I think these regenerative things, like you can have red light therapy that's really good for mitochondrial health, hyperbaric oxygen. Sauna is a huge one, especially because we talked about the detoxing. I mean, some people don't sweat, like it's crazy, but like some don't sweat, and that's one of your detox pathways. So doing sauna therapy really regularly, that's also preventative. Like that's a really good tool to use. So yeah, I think that once you feel good, you can add these things to just make you feel better, but also to optimize how your body is functioning.
That's interesting. I love that you said that because I'm totally like that. I like have the same thing every day because it's super easy and it's quick. But I know variety is so important for the body. The body needs different nutrients and a variety of different things in order to thrive.
Because you're also feeding your gut microbiome, right? And there's studies starting to show that different bacteria in your body do, in your gut, they do different things, right? Some can be helpful for mood, some maybe not, because you had mentioned like how your gut impacts your mood. Your gut does impact your mood. That's where we make serotonin, right? So any imbalance in your gut microbiome can throw that off. But when you're eating a diverse diet, you're also creating diversity within your gut.
Absolutely. So, what is one test that everyone should consider getting, in your opinion?
Oh, choosing one would be tough. But I would say that if I only could choose one, there's a test that I like. It's a functional medicine test. It's called a NutriEval. And so why I like that, it's blood and urine. And so it kind of gives me like a bird's eye view of like what's going on. So in the first page, it'll give me an idea of like how much oxidative stress someone has, because oxidative stress is what accelerates aging. Mitochondrial function, because your mitochondria is what gives us energy, makes us feel good, right? Your body needs that energy that they make. It looks at the omegas and it looks a little at some of the heavy metals, and then methylation, which tells me how you're detoxing. And then on one of the other pages, it gives me your micronutrients. I've had patients who are like taking 20 supplements, and then you look at their micronutrient levels and like they're not absorbing the supplements that they're taking. And you're just like, this is weird, right? So that helps me see like what are the imbalance. It will give me alpha lipoic acid, vitamin C, all the B vitamins, CoQ10. Like it gives me like a really good list where I could say, okay, we're gonna change your supplements and like tailor it to what is missing here, right? So I really do like. And then there's some markers that can kind of tell me if someone has, if their gut health needs to be addressed. I can kind of see it on there. It's not super accurate, but it gives me an idea. So I really like, if I had to pick one, that's like a little sample of all of them.
Okay, beautiful. And what is one thing people are doing that is damaging their health without realizing it?
That one is tough because there's so many things, but I would say that one thing that, I mean, I guess we're not directly doing, but is the like looking at your environment, right? And like the products that we're using and the toxins, because I think that that's like the last thing that we look at, right? It's just like we else and we're not really taking into consideration what we're putting on our body, what we're cleaning with, what we're inhaling and breathing in our home. So because that one can sneak up on you.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is one thing that gives a body the biggest boost?
I think it's how we eat.
Hmm.
Yeah, I would say that it's how we eat. That really, I mean, because every time you're eating, it's like you're doing something good or you're doing something bad, right? Every time you're ingesting something. So you're either eating for longevity or you're eating for diabetes. So I think that.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we eat bad one day, can the effects of that take a few days to show up, or even weeks or months later? How does that work? Because I know people who are like, oh, I eat good for the most part. Like, I'll eat good for 5 days out of the week, but on the weekend, I just eat whatever I want. What effect does that have on the body?
Well, it depends like what that bad is. I would say consistency. I think that like deviating every once in a while, you go on vacation or whatever, and you just want to have a bunch of sweets. In general, our body is resilient. I think that's fine. I think it's just like if that becomes like, oh, I'm just gonna have one sweet after dessert like every single day. I think it's just like being consistent about it, being mindful of how your body feels. Because one thing too, I think that once you start cleaning up your diet and you start to feel good, you're not really going to crave bad things. Once you start, like, there's a lot of things that I used to do when I was younger that, like, now I'm like, oh, I can't. Like, drink soda, I can't. It's too sweet. Like, I find it disgusting, but I used to love it. Right. So, like, I feel like just once you start cleaning things up, or even like fast food, I don't eat fast food. I used to love McDonald's when I was younger, but like, if I ate it now, I'd probably throw up, you know? So, it's just like, if you're doing the right things, you shouldn't be craving bad things.
Right, exactly. I remember having someone come over for dinner and they're like, your food is so bland. And I'm like, really? I think it tastes amazing because I don't use a lot of salt. I don't use a lot of sugar. And so I just handed them the salt and they went to town. But when I have something, like you said, like something sweet, I can't even imagine taking a sip of a soda, like without feeling like I'm gonna vomit, like the amount of sugar in there. So I think once we start those healthy habits, and then you know what it feels like to feel good. Like you just want to continue feeling good. Because what you said earlier, like it hit the nail on the head, is most people don't realize that they feel bad until they start feeling good. And then they're like, holy crap, like I got to change my ways. That's a pretty cool feeling, actually.
Yeah, I know it's a great feeling. And it's also that realization, like, wow, like if I feel this good, how much better can I feel?
Yeah, I think that's for me when I started getting into health and longevity, that was almost like, I don't know how I want to word this, but it was like I became obsessed with it, with like biohacking, and I'm like, how much better can I feel? And I had to tone that down a little bit because it was like, okay, you're feeling good. You can probably feel better, but like, I don't know, you can almost get carried away with that. What is your opinion?
Well, I agree. I think like the pendulum can swing too far the other way. And I think like obsessing about things is not healthy because that stresses you out. If you're just like, oh man, I gotta do this, or I gotta do this exactly this way, or I'm not gonna be, healthy. We're still here to enjoy life, right? Like experiencing things and to, have a glass of wine every once in a while and have the dessert. Like we're still here to experience life. So I would say, yes, do the things consistently that make you feel good, but also, it's okay. be perfect sometimes, right? Because that's not what we're here for. But you know what book you would probably like if you're into the biohacking? Have you heard of The Spark Factor?
No.
You would love that one. So it was written by Malu Maalouf, and it's a biohacking book for women. And so she goes through like the functional medicine stuff, like the Dutch test, the GI map, cortisol, and how the cortisol affects how it affects us. And we really don't talk about that enough, I feel. So it's all in there in that book, and she writes it in an interesting way. I've asked my patients to read it, and the ones that do, they come back and they're like, wow, that was really good. So you'll really like that.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that recommendation. It was so nice talking to you today, Victoria. Do you have any last minute thoughts you want to leave the audience with?
No, I mean, I think we did a good job of covering everything. I would say that if you are struggling at the moment, it's not all in your head. Find a provider that will listen to you and just know that you can get better, but you have to address your foundation of your lifestyle.
Thank you so much for being here. It was so much fun talking to you. I definitely think the next episode should be on cortisol. I think the audience would love that.
I would love that too.
Amazing. And thank you to our audience for tuning in. I think what people will take away from this episode is that if you don't feel well, there may be deeper answers, and you guys, you deserve to find them. For anyone who wants to learn more about Dr. Victoria's work, connect with her or to follow her, we'll include her website and social media in the show notes. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today. And we wish you a long and healthy life. Until next time, take care, everyone.